You're listening to the weekly podcast of Life Ministry Centre. For more information, visit www.lmc.org.au.
It's the beginning of a new year, and I'd like to talk about a new vision. A new year is a great time to produce a new vision, not only to produce it, but to think about it, pray about it, and do something about it. This morning I'm going to talk to the teachers, purely using them as an illustration, as an example. I'm actually, as I will describe later, talking to all of you, but I am using the teachers just as an illustration. The school had a new vision in 1979. That's when we started it. We hired some land from the education department. We bought two second-hand, small, relocatable classrooms, and Oxley College was in business. We employed Dale as our first principal, Dale Kent, and Mrs. Simpson, Mrs. Joyce Simpson, was our first teacher. Now, I'm going to talk about her for a moment, and I'm going to call her Joyce. Don't think I'm disrespectful. We are old friends now, and I'm allowed to do that. I remember Joyce so well as our first teacher. With the trucks outside, going to and fro from the trucks, parting in paper and chairs and machines and helping to set up the school. Even after she started teaching, she was there early and she was there late, still dusting and cleaning and setting up. She did a tremendous labourer's job as well as teaching. But as the weeks went by, a difficulty occurred in this new vision we were planting. Joyce had some, she was an experienced teacher, and she had very strong views on what a school should be like. I had no experience at all in raising or running a school, but I also had strong views on what I wanted Oxley College to be like, and they differed. So one day I called Joyce into my office. I discussed the problem and said, "Joyce, you either shape up or you ship out." And she was very nice, very sweet, very gentle, and said she agreed to shape up. Everyone was happy. I was particularly happy. Everything went on well. The school developed. And it took me many, many months before I understood that Joyce was not agreeing to shape up to my ideas, but to her ideas. I'm sure there's a message here for all husbands. I better not go into that this morning. So that was our new vision, and now it's developed into Oxley College as we know it today on this beautiful property that God has given us. Using the teachers as an example only, I want to suggest that the teachers have two responsibilities. The first one is a legal one. That is, they are employed and paid a salary to teach the academic subject for which they were hired. And that's a legal responsibility. But I suggest there is a second responsibility, which is entirely voluntary. No pressure about this one, no expectation. This is just personally a voluntary responsibility, and that is that they be willing to give up some of their precious personal spare time to help some of the students. Let me tell you two stories. My grandson, Andrew Pyman, at this stage was in Brother Wilfred Gordon's class, and he'd been chosen as form captain. And after a few weeks, he came to Wilfred. Wilfred, I can call Wilfred too, he's an old friend now. Came to Wilfred and said he wanted to give up being class captain. Wilfred said, why? And he said, well, it's pretty awkward trying to tell your friends what to do. They don't like it, and I don't think I'm too popular. I want to resign. But Wilfred said, I'll see you after school. And after school, he gave him half an hour of Wilfred's precious spare time. And he talked to him about leadership. He talked to him about the gift of leadership which some people have, and how that gift has to be trained and experience gained, and how leadership is a very important function and a responsibility within itself, and how leadership is quite a lonely job, and no matter how good you are at it, people are going to criticise you in your leadership. So he explained leadership to him, and Andrew was sufficiently impressed to say he would keep on as form captain. Andrew is now at 27, a full-time pastor at the Crossways Baptist Church. And he has, over the years, on several occasions, quite voluntarily from his point of view, spoken to me about Wilfred and that time he spent half an hour with him. He said, it changed my whole life. It gave me direction. It gave me confidence. And I set my sight on leadership from that moment. There is no doubt that Wilfred's half hour had an enormous impact on that lad, which he's appreciative of to this day. Another story regarding myself. I went to Scotch College, and our principal was Dr. Littlejohn. At this stage, he was near retirement. He was a very strong leader, but he was adored and loved and respected and honoured, I think, by every student. He was a great gentleman. The main oval had around it three rows of forms so that hundreds of people could sit around that oval. And at lunchtime, there'd be hundreds of students sitting around the oval on these forms having their lunch. Alongside the oval was a small hill, and Dr. Littlejohn's home and the boarders' homes were up that hill, and there were steps down the hill to the edge of the oval, and the main building's over here. One morning at chapel, we had chapel every morning. One morning at chapel, Dr. Littlejohn said there was rubbish being thrown down on the oval, and gentlemen, don't throw rubbish around, it will cease immediately. The next day, coming down the steps from his lunch, he saw again it was better, but there was still rubbish. So when he got to the bottom of the steps, he always wore his gown and his mortarboard. He gathered his gown up into a basket, and he stepped onto the oval and started going amongst the boys, picking up the bits of paper and bottle tops. Several hundred boys stood up straight away. Dead silence. None of us knew what to say. Here was this man we respected and honoured and loved so much, picking up our rubbish, and what could we do? And he went in that whole oval. He had a basket full of rubbish and went into his office. Next morning at chapel, not a word was said. But you should have seen that oval afterwards. It was always spotless. If some lad should drop some rubbish onto the oval, pick up that rubbish! Wasn't worth your while to drop anything onto that oval. And from that time forward, it stayed perfectly clean. What an impact that man had upon us. An enormous impact. I could tell you many stories of his impact upon my life. So I want you teachers to realise the enormous potential which you have if you are willing to give some of your spare time to your students. Now realise I'm using you as an example. I have no doubt that many, if not all, of our teachers are doing what I'm about to say. I think there are three things in this second responsibility. The first one is teaching your academic subject. The second responsibility is this voluntary one, when you make yourself available, when you start exercising your Christian ministry. We have, I think, counting this morning, well over 100 teachers and helpers in the school. And I believe all our teachers are ongoing Christians from different denominations, which is a joy, because we don't want this to be a denominational school. This is a school for the body of Christ. Now, if I think there are three aspects of this voluntary responsibility. First of all, being a model yourself of Christian behaviour, Christian thinking, Christian speaking. Just being a model to your students. Secondly, the teachers, if they want to, can weave into their relationship with the children Christian principles and ethics, the need to be an ethical person, a trustworthy person, a truthful person, a clean person, the moral values, with right attitudes, no resentment, no bitterness, no hatred, no lack of forgiveness, no fear. There's a host, hundreds of aspects of Christianity which, without anyone being conscious of it, you could weave into your teaching so that there is a Christian principle all the time being imparted in your teaching. And thirdly, and that's the one I spoke about with Wilford and Andrew, the willingness to spend some of your free time to talk to students. I just pictured, as I was preparing this talk, 100 teachers willing to give one half an hour of their time a week to a student. That means a lot of impacts. That means each week, 100 impacts. That's once a week, 100 teachers taking one student after school to help them, not just academically necessarily, but in any area where it is obvious that child needs help. Some teachers might say, well, that's the parent's responsibility, not mine. That's true. But we also know that many of those children do lack a lot of training that we'd like to see them getting. In fact, some of your children spend more waking time with you teachers than they do with their parents. So you do have an enormous opportunity to have a tremendous impact on their lives. You know, in 1 year, if 100 teachers spent one session a week after school with a student, I don't know how many weeks in the year the school runs. Say it runs for 40 weeks a year. That's 41 hundreds. That's 4,000 impacts in 1 year. That's enormous, you know. 4,000 impacts on Oxley College by the teachers in 1 year. What an influence combined together that must have. Now, that vision, and this is a vision, isn't just for teachers, it's for every Christian sitting here this morning. Every one of us, teachers or congregation, have a ministry. Bible says that. Bible says we are ministers unto the Lord. We all have a potential ministry. And God says in Hebrews 13 that we are to pursue doing good. And that's what we're talking about this morning, doing good. And you might say, well, I'm not a teacher, how can I do that? No, no, it's not the teaching, it's the principle I'm trying to get across. The principle of giving some of your spare, precious time to help someone else. For instance, you might know someone in the church, in the school, down your street. The lady's ill, and she has young children, and she has no family. Parents are dead, and she has no brothers or sister living in Melbourne, and no family. And so you might go to her and offer to cook some meals for her and the family until she's well enough to do it herself. Her husband might have a broken arm, and you might go down and say, look, I'll mow your lawn for you every Saturday until you're strong enough to do it yourself. There's no end to the things you can do. You could go into an old people's home or people outside of an old people's home who can't read. I'm very conscious of this need because, as many of you know, I'm substantially blind and I can't read. But Bob Toll comes to me from our church once a week and gives me 4 hours on a Tuesday afternoon reading and researching whatever I want researched. And Jill reads to me after our evening meal each evening in a religious book of some sort, and then we discuss the whatever we can gain from that reading. And if it weren't for Bob and Jill reading to me, I'd be completely grounded. And so you might know someone, and you can easily find someone in old people's homes who have no one to come and read to them, and you're willing to go, perhaps only once a week, and to read to them for an hour. That would be a wonderful thing for them. And so I could go on and on. I don't need to. You will understand. There's enormous possibilities in the community around about us and within our own churches and our own school. An enormous number of opportunities where you can do good to others by sacrificing some of your time for their benefit. That's the vision I want to sow today. That's the vision I want to leave with you. It won't work unless you agree that you want to do it personally. Then you have to pray about it. You have to put time aside. You've got to provide that time, and then you've got to decide what you're going to do. It won't just happen unless you take that vision aboard and plan and work it out so that it takes place on the ground. So I leave that challenge with you this morning. Just before I go, I'll tell you one more school story. One of my granddaughters, Emily Pyman, was in Joyce's class. She'd be about 5 years old, I suppose. And Joyce had flannel things up on the wall, trying to teach the children about dinosaurs in the far distant past. And Emily put her hand up, and Joyce said, "Yes, Emily." She said, "My granddad," that's me, "my granddad was alive with the dinosaurs." And Joyce said, "You can never laugh at children. That's a terrible thing to do." But she said, "I couldn't help picturing Pastor Oxley with the dinosaurs." And I put my hand out of my mouth. I couldn't stop it. And Emily was very upset at 5 years of age. She stood up, put her hands on the hip. She said, "It is true. My granddad lived with the dinosaurs." Now, I have good news for you this morning, in case you're concerned. The years are slipping away for me, but I did not live with the dinosaurs.